If we're all ready. Ainanda tanujakin karam, patitamam visame bhavam buddho, kripiya tava pada pungaja, stitaduli sadrisam vichintaya. O my Lord, O Krishna, son of Maharaj Nanda, I'm your eternal servant, but because of my own fruitive acts, I've fallen into this horrible ocean of nescience. Now, please, be cautiously merciful to me. Consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. So again, an expression of humility, not like some prayer, here I am your servant, you know, here I am, you know, your devotee. One of Srila Prabhupada's sannyasi disciples wrote a poem, and in each one he said, your devotee. And Prabhupada said, no, not your devotee, your servant. We are not considering ourselves your devotee, no, your servant. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not claiming to be the servant either. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is simply saying, a particle of dust at your lotus feet. Somehow or other, I have to be at your lotus feet. And so I'm there, and then like, okay, the smallest thing at your lotus feet, a particle of dust. So the success step takes us back to our roots. It deals with the essential nature of spiritual life. And again, the other day, when we also discussed humility, and here obviously is an expression of humility, we discussed dependence on Krishna. And in this verse, very much the dependence is on Krishna. It's like, we depend on Krishna. And therefore, humility is not some sort of artificial attitude, you know, where we have to always bow our heads and speak with a very soft voice. It's just, we are not able to do anything. The service of Krishna is very difficult. It's very challenging. Because there is no limit to the need of Krishna. Krishna is desiring that every single living being within this entire cosmic manifestation, that's not one universe, but that's all the unlimited, in all the unlimited Brahmandas, that all these living beings are restored in their original position. Is there time? Is there time to even begin that task? It's what they call daunting. Daunting means it's like you just look at that task and think like, but this is too great a work, too great a mission. How can we take this on? But this is the mission of the Vaishnava, no less. There's no less. It's not like, let's distribute some books or... No. Every living being... Udvega nadiba. Don't cause anxiety to any living being. Udvega nadiba. It deals with ahimsa, non-violence. Then it is said that non-violence is not just passively non-violent, you know. I mean... Someone is drowning. I didn't throw that person in the water. No, I didn't. It wasn't me. You know, so... Look, they're going under. Oh, well, you know. But it has nothing to do with me. I didn't do it. No, honest. I really didn't do it. I didn't throw that person in the water. No. That's not good enough. Active. do everything you can to pull that person out of the water. Otherwise, we say you're violent, neglectful. Huh? So it's neglectful. That's passive violence. So active violence and passive violence is there. When we are not doing what we can to save all those who are suffering in ignorance, the ocean of nescience. You realize what an ocean is. I mean, unless you've been on an ocean, you cannot fully appreciate an ocean. See, once you're out on the ocean, really out there, you're not just going to be back. You're just going to be there, and it's water and water and water in all directions. Only water. Endless water, water, water in all directions. In all directions, endless ignorance. Ignorance, ignorance is bliss in all directions, wherever you look. Unlimited. No end, no end. We just encounter more and more. That's the material world. Ignorance piled upon ignorance. Just like, you know, whoever... I'm not blaspheming a particular country, but I'm just giving an example. But I went to America, right? And I was looking at those skyscrapers. And I was just looking at them and thinking about them and thinking, why do they need these skyscrapers? Is it that they don't have enough land? Not really. I mean, there's lots of land in America, actually. If you drive through the states, you know, outside of the cities, there's lots and lots of land. Plenty. It's not because they don't have land. Then why do they have to have skyscrapers? They had to have skyscrapers because they had to make buildings that were so tall that logically they should fall over. But they didn't. Oh, just see. United States of America. Like, see our power, symbol of our control over material nature. We have conquered. That's why we need skyscrapers. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. They say that in the top, that I haven't experienced, but I heard that on the very top, when there's wind, it moves. That sounds intense. It's like, I don't know if I would like. For me, it's enough to go to the 60th floor in an elevator that goes too fast and feel my stomach and so on. I don't particularly like skyscrapers. I like the ground. Grass. It's nice. It's nice. Grass, cows nearby. Sounds good. Anyway... But it's interesting how there's an ocean of nescience, just nescience, and all just because of the wrong motivation, just because putting the self in the center, then extended selfishness, my country, my family, my community, my country, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, my country, best country in the world. Is it really? Or is there sukh and dukh in that place? Is there happiness and distress in that place? No. So how can it be the best country in the world? It's as bad as everywhere else, I'm sorry to say. It's part of the ocean of nescience. Krishna Bodhi Sejiv Anadir Bhari Munkar. Ata eva, dharmaya. There's one word missing. Ata eva, dharmaya dheya, samsara dukha. That's it. So, there we are. that since time immemorial, the living being is turned away from Krishna, and as a result, Maya is giving them, that living being, samsara dukkha, the suffering of the cycle of birth and death.
Yeah, so this is our situation. Material world, what can be said? Lord Chaitanya says, I am your eternal servant, but I forgot your lordship. Now I've fallen into the ocean of nescience and have been conditioned by the external energy. Be causelessly merciful to me by giving me a place with the particles of dust at your lotus feet, so that I may engage in the service of your lordship as your eternal servant. Natural humility and eagerness then awoke in Lord Chaitanya, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He prayed to Krishna to be able to chant the Mahamantra in ecstatic love. So like this.
In the next verses, we are approaching the advanced stages of devotional service, ecstatic devotional service. And here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is approaching such ecstatic devotional service. And there's no question in approaching ecstatic devotional service without the mercy of Krishna. Because that is a gift from Krishna. It cannot be stolen. It cannot be taken. Devotional service cannot be taken. I'm going to take some devotional service. No. Devotional service is given. It is given. It's given by the caretakers of devotional service. The Vaishnavas, they take care of devotional service and they give it to us. They preserve devotional service. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in his Bhakti Kalpataru, in the wish-fulfilling desire tree of devotional service. And he says that devotional service is always, is like a tree, a wish-fulfilling desire tree. Somehow or other, I received that tree from my spiritual master. But due to my harsh mind, I did not properly look after that tree. And the result is that it became, it got into a poor condition. Didn't look very nice anymore. But turning to the Vaishnavas, who are the caretakers of that tree, it can be restored in its original glory. Because the Vaishnavas preserve the purity of devotional service. Pure devotional service is not just a resolve. It is not just something that we fix in the mind. Now I will engage in pure devotional service. It means to learn the science of what is pleasing to Krishna, and to be submissive, and to hear from those who are expert in the spiritual world. Experts assist experts. One can see experts. I was in Jagannath Puri in the Tota Gopinath temple, and this pujari, he was just making decorations with like tilak and so on in various colors. I mean, fast, like, and it was just really, it was perfect. Because he did it every day for many, many years. Then one can do anything fast and nicely. Like that. The art of serving Krishna. Different arts. Krishna and Balaram, they were educated in different arts. Different arts. When Sandipani Muni was training them, they learned different arts. These arts were actually the arts of the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, these activities were being performed. There is a whole list in the Brahma Samhita, in the purports. I'm a little afraid to go look for it now on an electronic machine because I'll lose the pace of my...
It's in Krishna book also, no?
No. I want it in the... There, Bhaktisiddhanta. okay. I can't rattle off the list of 64, that I can guarantee you, because I once read an article, just for your information, whether it's true I don't know, but they say that a lot of people that have problem with memory, like me, it is because they have worms in the brain, and the worms are actually eating holes in the brain. So it's not just that memory is gone, that's just the brain is gone, that's just holes. I thought you might like to know that. just to feel better about yourself. Just a few holes. That was interesting. Anyway, what was I thinking about? I hope this worm didn't just eat that part of my brain. But the 64 arts that are the arts in the spiritual world, they include many things. Some things are outstanding. I remember that one of the arts that Krishna learned was playing on water pots. Very expert playing on water pots. Now, you may think playing on water pots, but I have heard a man playing on water pot, on a water pot, on the train. Yeah, and he was begging, and it was good. He played at different parts of the water pot, just a clay pot, drumming on the clay pot, and it's like in various places, getting so many sounds of these clay pots, and then one can play simultaneously on a whole bunch. Han playing, you know, is the modern imitation, actually. I mean, I don't know if you know the Han, but it's a metal disc type of thing, you know, like, looks like a UFO. And it makes nice sounds if you drum on it. Right? But all that comes from the original drumming on water pots from Krishna. It's a perverted reflection of drumming on the water pots. That is an art. Yes. Making very beautiful resting places decorated with flowers. That was another one, I remember. These worms.
Animal voices.
What?
Animal voices.
Animal voices. Was that one of the... Yeah? Okay. Imitating the animal voices. That's in the Nectar Devotion also. Now, when Krishna... Of course, Krishna speaks all languages, it is said in the Nectar Devotion. So I always think that when Krishna is imitating, along with the cowherd boys, the sound of the animals, it's like we can all imitate French, and if you don't speak French, well, you can make sounds like... But if you do speak French, then you will probably not just do that, you'll probably say something in French, right? You know? So while everyone else is imitating French and is doing like, it is very important, quelqu'un qui parle français va parler français, n'est-ce pas? C'est ça. Somebody who speaks French will say something in French. Right? In that way, I think when Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends are imitating the languages, the cowherd boys are imitating the sounds, I think Krishna is secretly speaking with the animals. That's what I suspect. I can't prove it, but it's just my suspicion. I think that's... Yeah. Like that. We can try to imitate. There's different arts. We can try to imitate the sounds of the animals as Krishna is doing. I was living on a farm for a while, and after a while I could hear when a bull was mowing or when a cow was mowing, you know, it's like there's a difference in the way they speak. Bull, that was a bull. That was a bull.
Yeah.
I got that more. So Krishna is imitating like that these sounds, and but there are so many hidden layers in Krishna's pastime, so many hidden realities that may not come to the forefront for all. Just like Sanatana Goswami was speaking about the pastime of Krishna being captured in the coils of Kaliya, and then at one point it just got too much, you know, it just got too much anxiety because it just didn't end. I mean, all the residents of Vrindavan, they were just watching this horrible moment, and it never ended. Krishna was just in the coils of that horrible serpent, and he wasn't coming out. So, you know, the coward boys, I mean, they had a really, well, what you call a hell of a day, because in the morning, they drank the water of the Yamuna, and it was poisoned, and they died. All right, Krishna revived them. So they were like, God, we were dead. Yeah? I mean, really, we were dead. And now we're back alive. Next moment, Krishna climbs in this Kadamba tree, jumps in the Yamuna. As he goes in the water, the whole Yamuna goes up 1 foot, and Krishna begins to make musical sounds in the water. And next moment, there comes this horrible serpent, and the whole thing begins, right? First they died, then next thing, Krishna is like being practically killed by that snake, or on the edge. It was just emotionally too much for one day, you know what I'm saying? How much can you take? My mother Yasoda, you know, was beyond herself. Nanda Maharaj and the coward man, you know, had to hold her back. Balaram held them back, held the men back from going into the river, and like that, the whole thing continued. So, at one point, it said, at one point, Sanatana Goswami describes, it was so much anxiety. It was just so much anxiety, the mind couldn't register it anymore. And they just stood there, and they could mentally, they could not register it anymore. And in a sense, they couldn't see anymore what was happening. Krishna took advantage of that and invited the gopis to come to join him and to dance with him on the hoots. And Sanatana Goswami describes there was a whole rasa dance taking place on the hoots of Kaliya. But no one else could see it because their minds could just no longer register what was going on. It was just too much. So Krishna's pastimes have so many different layers of depth. How can one understand? Just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that we are flying, that we are all birds that are flying in the sky of realization about Krishna. They're all flying on different levels. Some are flying on higher levels, some are flying on lower levels. And I'm always thinking, in our case, we are not birds that were meant to fly. There are some birds, they don't fly, like chickens, you know what I'm saying? They're not meant to fly. But somehow or other, I tell you, we are flying chickens. Yes? We are flying by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, we don't deserve to fly, not by our karma. We're not meant to fly. We're not meant to be part of the realizations of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Flying chickens. And think about that one. Anyway, so this dependence on Krishna is not just like, I depend on Krishna. I cannot lift one finger without Krishna. Yes, that is true. The dependence on Krishna means that for the breath in our lungs, you know, we depend on Krishna for the lungs to work and so on. That's one thing. But that's not where the focus goes. The dependence on Krishna means not fulfilling the lungs with air, the dependence on Krishna to know Krishna. We cannot know Krishna without Krishna revealing himself. We cannot serve Krishna without Krishna revealing himself and giving us that chance to Krishna. So that dependence on Krishna, we depend on him to reveal himself. That's the issue. Oh, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Krishna, where are you? Not, I can't see you anywhere. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Chanting name after name, but not seeing you. And therefore, this chanting is an austerity, because I don't see you. If I would see you, hey, then I would be chanting in a different mood. Then I would be chanting in ecstasy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh, shark-shaped earrings, lotus eyes. Everything. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. It would be very enlivened. Now it's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. It's a sadhana, it's a practice, it's tapasya. Tapo divyam. Divine tapasya. Like this. And the music helps, makes it a bit easier. So Lord Chaitanya is praying now in preparation for the coming verse. Natural humility and eagerness then awoke in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see, it's like now we're not just talking about humility, we're talking about eagerness. Natural eagerness. And it said here, the word for eagerness that is given is Ati Utkanta. Ati Utkanta, great eagerness, actually. In the study of the Nectar Devotion, we come up with varieties. And it said that there is Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. This lolyam is eagerness. And this is the eagerness, this is the price one has to pay to go from vaidhi bhakti, devotional service according to rules and regulations, to spontaneous devotional service. This is lolyam, eagerness. Eagerness to attain it. But this is not what we're speaking about. We're speaking about utkanta, ati utkanta, or also known as samutkanta. Samutkanta is one of the symptoms of bhava, as is described. Samutkanta is not just eagerness. It is eagerness to be with Krishna. It's not just eagerness to have a spiritual emotion. I'm very eager. No, but it is eagerness to see Krishna. Eagerness to be with Krishna. One cannot bear to be in separation from Krishna. It's not like, I forgot. What did you forget? I forgot to chant my rounds. I just forgot. Jeez, I think yesterday I didn't chant. I just forgot. We forget. We fall into this ocean of nescience. We forget Krishna. So how much time a day are we remembering Krishna? Totally never thought of him for a moment. Forgot Krishna. No, the opposite. Each moment, intense desire to be with Krishna. Therefore unbearable when that moment is not with Krishna. That is where we're going. So, natural humility and eagerness then awoke in Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He prayed to Krishna to be able to chant the Maha Mantra in ecstatic love. So, any questions so far?
You said caretaker, you have to turn to the caretakers of devotional service. Because the creeper is already ruined, so if you turn to the...
The creeper is already what?
The devotional creeper is due to negligence is not like.
You not changed the word. You said a word. I just missed one word.
Ruined.
Thank you. The creeper is already ruined.
Like you said that by Guru's mercy we got that devotional service.
I didn't say it's ruined. The tree, Kalpataru is a tree. It's not ruined, but it's like not in a good condition. It cannot be ruined. Even my heart's mind cannot ruin this tree. It's more powerful. But it's not manifest in its full glories. So if you want to go further, if we want to go deeper, if we want to get out of this condition where we are in spiritual life, but not really in ecstasy, then we have to get serious. Then we can no longer just play around with spiritual life. Then we have to get serious and really endeavor. That's what it takes. The real thing. And then we have to really take shelter of the Vaishnavas and serve them. And just whatever they want. Then we must be like what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about Sanatana Goswami. He said, "You are my property. Your body is my property." So then we must be ready to be the property of our spiritual master. Are we ready for that? The property. What's he going to do with that property? Anything. Go preach to the Eskimos. Are you ready? But how to be a vegetarian over there? Only deep freeze vegetables. Is that healthy? So there are complications, you know, when you go out preaching to the Eskimos. Are you ready? In your case, the snow might melt. So it's that, you know, it's that's what it means. And not only the property of the spiritual master, but the property of the Vaishnavas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was like not only respectful to his spiritual master, and everyone else couldn't care, he was also respectful to the god brothers of his spiritual master, to the senior Vaishnavas. Prabhupada was very much like starting that, you know. Ask your senior god brother. And he used to say things like that. It meant something to be a senior. So, yeah, that's Vedic culture. That's also Vaishnav culture. Vaishnav culture is not exactly the same as Vedic culture. We are not the International Society for Vedic Culture. There's a distinction. But Vaishnav culture is in some ways parallel to Vedic culture. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is based on Vedic culture in many ways. So respecting the Vaishnavas means to like to bow down, right? Bhagavad Gita is stating we should bow down to elders, respect our parents, respect spiritual master, teachers, elders. Okay. In India there's still something like that. But what does bowing down mean? Man mana mava bat bhakto madjajimam namaskaru. When it says, just bow down to me. It means it's more than physically bowing down and touch your... And with the tip of your nose, you touch the ground. Like some sort of exercise. Gymnastics. No. So what is this obeisances? What does it mean?
Be like following the instructions given by the Vaishnavas.
So what does that mean? It means we're bowing our will. We don't just bow our bodies, we're bowing our will. So it's like, my will is gives me my independence. I can do what I want. Yes. No, I bow that. I bow that will to a superior. I'm free. The horse says, I'm free. Let him go. He'll run. He'll run. Enjoying the freedom. Isn't it that maybe here you don't see it so much because the dogs in this country, they are too weak, you know, to even do anything. But in many countries, you see dogs that compete with cars. They can't handle it. Cars are like fast, you know what I'm saying? Because dogs are fast, you know what I'm saying? And this dog is walking around. And it knows I am fast. That's why the game of throwing sticks is lots of fun, because just see how fast I am, you know what I mean? I'm super fast. Super fast is my name. Then, you know, suddenly this car comes past, you know, vroom vroom. You know. Sometimes they even try to bite the tires, you know what I mean? Out of envy, because they can't stand, you know, that this car is faster. Stupid dog. Yeah. So it's that sense of being fast that's there. Enjoying one's power. And here we are also. I have my power. And by my will, I can do with it what I want. But now I'm submitting that to you. There's this other verse, Ridaya Kandare Vosachi Nandana, that in the innermost chambers of the heart, there must be Sachinandan. So that little private part, yes, 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 please accept my most humble obeisances and my respect and everything and insight in my heart. I don't care at all. I will just do whatever I want. Pranam. No, the innermost chamber of the heart. That one. So, it's very deep, this independence. And as a result, we don't get the adhikar, kanista adhikari, madhyam adhikari, uttama adhikari, adhikar. The emphasis is on adhikar. Adhikar means authorization. You need authorization. Sorry, you know, you need a password. If you don't have the password, can't get in. Just like on the computer, you have administrator and you have a guest user. Right? And if you go into the guest menu, you cannot really change anything in the settings on the computer. You know, you can sort of go in, but you can't really do much. When you're the administrator, then you can go in and you can change the settings. You can change so many things, if you like. You know, turn off all the sounds, for example. And like, you know, you can do. But a guest, no. Guest cannot do. Because the guest doesn't have the adhikar. Doesn't have the authorization to do that. So you get a certain level of adhikar in spiritual life. And no matter how much you try, you just don't get the excess. And part of that excess is to bow down to the Vaishnavas. If you don't bow down to a Vaishnava and to the Vaishnavas, no excess. Sorry. Only on the external. On the externals. But no access to the inner experience of bhakti. No. Then our tree is dry. But by bowing to the Vaishnavas, that tree will flourish. Other question? Someone will repeat it. I cannot hear, but... Okay. I missed a few words, but I think I got it. You said that when we are bowing down, we become like a speck of dust, and it means that we can do anything, anything he wants. Yes, yes. And when Prabhupada was here, everyone understood it in that way. That was the one thing that was very much prevalent. Yeah? Whatever Prabhupada said, that was going. That was there. The rest was, you know, nobody knew that much. Nobody had read that many books. Nobody knew much about tradition, culture, this, that. But that one thing was very, very strong. Now, in one sense, we know a lot more, right? Well, just let me finish my sentence and then I'll... Now we know a lot more, but we don't have that spirit anymore. We hold back more.
Just wanted to add that spirit went further, because most of us didn't hear directly from Prabhupada, but took what RGBC and TP and even Temple Commander said as being the words of Prabhupada.
Sure. Yeah.
That was an intelligence.
Even when I joined, it was like that. And when I was the temple commander, what an authority I was. And, you know, in those days, and later I became temple president, and what kind of authority was I? I had to sort of negotiate, you know. If you do this service, then, you know, and you do it faithfully for like 3 months, then you can go to India, you know what I mean? Carrot, carrot, carrot. You know? If you, you know, like... You know, yeah, always negotiate business. That's what it became later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Prabhupada instilled very much that spirit, to be the speck of dust and can do anything, and people would go. And then it continued in the whole movement. It's just like the other day, I was also getting a little bit into memory lane, you know, and kind of describing something, and I was talking about how devotees used to get swapped, right? Devotees used to get swapped. I mean, like, they were in a zone, they were under an authority, and then, like, under a temple, you know, from the guru, a place under a temple president, and then, yeah, and then the temple president would make a deal with someone from another country or something, and just swap you. And then one day they call you in the office and say, you got swapped. Oh, jeez, I got swapped. And then you get to, I got swapped, you know. Yeah, really, yeah, where are you going? To Brazil, you know what I mean? I don't know, yeah, I got swapped. And if you were like, sometimes you had a big devotee, you know, a big Sankirtan, you got swapped for 2 or 3 even. They had a big book distributor. They could be swapped for 2 or 3 others. That was good. So, yeah, good slave trade. But that level of surrender, that was all based on surrender. Otherwise, how could you get swapped?
Got married like that too.
Yeah, some got married like that too. Yeah. Yeah. Did you get married like that? She got married like that. Huh? Then tell us a story. How did it happen? You never met him before?
No, he was the temple treasurer, and I didn't have a particular liking for him. But I was single, I was the head pujari, he was the treasurer, they wanted to not swap either one of us or be caught in a swap. So they brought me in the office and they said, well, not asking you, this is what Srila Prabhupada wants, so you tell me if you want to surrender to Prabhupada's will, and he's the one you should marry tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So it happened.
Yeah.
Now it was 41 years later.
So it happened. Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting. Such a spirit, totally different spirit, you know. I mean, that's what really happened in the mid-80s when the faith broke down, you know, like gurus had difficulties, the faith broke down, and then once that faith was broken, as soon as the faith broke down in the gurus, everyone took back their independence, immediately. That independence had been deposited, you know, with the guru for a long time. Okay, here's my independence. I'm giving it up now. Yes, yes, I'm giving to you the deposit. But as soon as the guru had difficulties, everyone came and took their independence. Took it. And just walked away with it. Yeah. And they never get it back. They got divorced also. See, they took their independence. And then they never gave that back. And then later, in the movement, you know, everyone just approached everything with their independence. Always kept their independence. That's ISKCON today. Everyone has kept his own independence. No one, very few, have put that independence at the feet of their spiritual master. And then the spiritual master is treated like some sort of counselor, some sort of a psychologist who, you know, gives you good advice, and it's interesting what he says. No, really. And he has interesting insights, absolutely. Sort of. And he's definitely not an ordinary person. Yeah. Sometimes he says things that really make sense. Other times I can't relate to him at all, but anyway, you know, that's okay. It's like, you can't expect. He's not Prabhupada after all. Anyway, maybe that's a little cynical, you know, the way I'm going, but there's an element of all that. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in his prayer, is approaching with eagerness the higher levels, and my point was very clearly there is, yes, the particle of dust and how one gets the adhikar that way. And that's what we're talking about. How to get the authorization to enter into these levels. And without it, like yesterday in Srivasangan, some were allowed inside and others were locked out. And even amongst those who were locked out, there were many who would have really wanted to be in there. They wanted to be in there, and still they were not allowed in. Sometimes there were incidents of people, out of curiosity, getting into the house. Srivas's mother-in-law was curious, and she was hiding during in the house, and everyone came for the kirtan, and Lord Chaitanya started and said, I don't know what it is. Something is obstructing me. I can't get into the mood. I think there is an intruder here. It's like she must have been shaking in her hiding place. And then Srivas was called to check it out. And Srivas went looking and he found his mother-in-law. And he just like threw her out, like literally, physically out, out, out. Not that that's the natural way to treat mother-in-laws, and that's the purport of that particular story. There are many mother-in-law jokes in the world, but you know, but she didn't have the adhikar. She was just not sufficiently surrendered in devotional service. So that's interesting. With that, we'll have a little more kirtan, and then after that, we'll carry on. I think I'm going to lift this up a little.